Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Though they're not lining the halls of Canton, Ohio's museum yet, there are plenty of great football players that wore the jersey number 90 in the NFL's history. We have Jeremy McFarland of the Football's Family Podcast coming into the Pigpen to help us find the best and a top 10 list coming up in a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of Pigskin Dispatch, your portal to positive football history, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. We are in our Football by Numbers series once again, and we're on jersey number 90. We have our good friend joining us today, Jeremy McFarland from the Football's Family Podcast here on Sports History Network. Jeremy McFarland, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren Hayes, it's good to be back.
We just talked to you a little over a week ago. We had the big Tecmo Bowl podcast on there, and that was very popular, and we're glad to have you back here so soon.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's opened the door up to my 80s nostalgia, and I have binge-watched the Generation 1 Transformers in the last week. I appreciate this. This is, my nerddom is out and running wild.
Well, at least I see you're not wearing like one of the Michael Jackson jackets or anything right now in sequence glove.
As much as I want to, I can't do that. I'm going to leave that for him to do.
Okay.
I'm not that cool.
All right. Well, that's probably a good thing for all of us then. So, well, you know, we have a great number here tonight. And, you know, as we were talking before we came on the air, this is one of the few numbers that the Pro Football Hall of Fame doesn't give us any help, because there is nobody in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, according to them, that wore jersey number that is enshrined in Canton. Can you believe that? That's a hard one to swallow.
It blew me away when I looked at it this morning. I'm like, wait a minute. Of all the years, number 90, all the years of the NFL, number 90 is not in the Hall of Fame. Not yet, at least.
That's true. We're probably thinking in our discussion we had here, we're thinking probably definitely two, maybe three, even four of these guys probably in the next two decades will probably be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So they'll do some number 90, some justice there. And
absolutely. I agree.
So I guess we can start just about anywhere that you want to start with any player, because we have a lot to pick from.
I want to start with one of my personal favorites of all time, if I can. You can't see this, but I have here a napkin. And my dad said, he told me what he was going to do. He said, Jeremy, I'm going to LP Field and I'm going to meet some Titans. I'm like, well, can't you take me with you? And he's like, no, he worked for the state and it was a state business thing that he was doing it. And inside that meeting, he got a picture next to Javon Kearse, the Freak.
Okay.
And Javon Kearse is one of my all time favorite Titans. And he's called the Freak because there's a story that he didn't want to work out one day, or he just didn't feel like it. So he said, he told the guys, the trainers, that if I could touch the ceiling, I think the ceiling was 13, 14 feet tall. If I could touch that, would you let me off of working out today? Of course, they thought he couldn't do it. And he said, sure. So he flat-footed touched it, looked at them and walked off. He was, I'll give you a little bit of stats here for him. Let me see if I pull it up here. He was drafted in, my mind went blank. I had it right here. Here it is. He was drafted in 1999, was their first round draft pick out of Florida. Now, I was like, why do you want to get somebody out of Florida? Well, in 16 games, his first season, in 16 games, he recovered 8 fumbles, had 15 tackles for loss, 49 solo tackles and 14.5 sacks. This guy right here ran one of the Ishmael brothers down from behind. Now, if you know who Quadre and the Rocket Ishmael were for the NFL, they were extremely fast people. He ran them from behind. But what I loved about watching Javon Kearse play, and I remember going to a game and watching him, you know, you have the defensive ends. He's a defensive end, and they usually line up right over or off to the side of the tackles. He was almost to the out of bounds over there close to the cornerback. I'm like, there is no way that this guy is going to get to the quarterback by being that far off the line of scrimmage. I was wrong. He got a sack on that play. He was so fast, so athletic, and his hands are two or three sizes bigger than a normal man's hands. If you ever see a picture of him, that's what they show, how big his hands were. That's why he could do what he did. It hurt. You know, you don't want to get attached to players because they're players and this is a business, but it hurt when he went to Philadelphia. But it felt good when he came back to the Titans. Is Javon Kearse a Hall of Famer? No. But is he one of my favorite all-time players? Well, absolutely he is.
Well, you just named, you know, you gave a reason why he was called the Freak. I don't know if I believe the whole jumping up in the ceiling thing. I think you checked about 7-8 boxes why he's a freak of nature, you know, and I'm excluding the extra large hands, you know, 14 and a half sacks as a rookie in a National Football League. That's almost unheard of. You know, all the statistics that you told, you know, you're saying fast enough to go from that wider stance. I think they call that like a 9 wide when they do that, you know, like a 9 technique or something.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, so. And here's the thing about Javon. If you watch how people would have to cover him and they would block him, they had to try to get him to go all the way around the cornerback. They tried to kind of usher him around because no lineman could take him on pure athletically. They just couldn't do it. So it's more like they're going to try to use his speed against him, and 14 and a half times it didn't work. Now he did, his time in Philadelphia was, he had some injury issues. When we came back to Titans, he did a little bit better, but I tell you what, for those years that he played for Tennessee, we enjoyed watching him play. In fact, Javon might have been my second or third jersey that I bought when I started buying Titans jerseys.
Yeah, I can remember he came on like gangbusters there in that 99 season. And I think like every single football show that was on television, every pregame, he was a part of that conversation that entire season. And very aptly so, because he was that dominant of a player. So, yeah, it's a shame that he had to move on to Philadelphia, had some injury issues, and sort of declined his career a little bit sooner than many expected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Part of it is how he would – if you are that athletic and you rely upon your speed and you lose with Achilles or with anything in the back of your leg, which I believe is what happened to him, that's where you start to lose it. And for Javon, who had so much athletic ability – he just couldn't get it back, and that's a shame. But once you hit the age of 30 in football, for the most part, unless you're Tom Brady, you know, your athletic, your ability goes down a little bit. But he was a three-time Pro Bowler, first-time All-Pro, first-team All-Pro. It was pretty good career for a guy out of Florida.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Florida had some pretty good teams back then too. They were pretty strong.
It hurts me to say that. But.
Yeah, they were pretty good though. The old football coach was there, so.
Oh yeah,
Very nice.
But that is probably my favorite 90 of all time, right there.
Okay, well, what do you want to do? You want to put him on the list now, or do you want to wait?
Because I would say that if he's not on the list, he is 1A. So I would say that he would be up there. But looking at the rest of them, it's kind of hard. Are we looking at 10 today?
Yeah, we're going to try to shoot for 10 here.
So he probably will be on it then.
Okay. Well, let's just put him on a standby mode here, and we'll try to put him in sequentially where we think he's going to go here.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Now you have a second one in mind you want to talk about?
I'm going to follow your lead. Your right, Moses, well, lead me through.
Well, let's go to who I think is probably maybe the top name on this list right now. And he's not particularly my favorite, because I think my favorite's going to take him And I think you can probably imagine who that is. Yeah, but I think Julius Peppers, 17 seasons wearing a number 90 and doing what Julius Peppers does. I think he's an unbelievable athlete. What a career and what longevity to his career that he's had.
Oh, he's on that list. We might as well go ahead and put him down in permanent ink.
Yeah, most definitely. You want to chat about him?
Oh, absolutely. Julius Peppers, one of those guys that I enjoyed watching. I remember when he came out and I'm like, well, who is Julius Peppers? And then he let us know quickly who he is. He had an interesting career arc. I remember with Carolina. That was such a good team with him with Carolina for those years. But I don't remember him with the Bears. And if I think hard enough, I probably will. But with the Green Bay Packers, he had so much ability that they moved him to linebacker. I remember that. I think he had 56. He was wearing 56. And that year, I want to say one of those years, either the Bears or the Packers, he almost went to the Super Bowl or went to the Super Bowl with the Packers. I can't remember the years that the Packers went to.
Well, he was with the Packers 2014, 2015, 2016. I don't think they did not make the Super Bowl those years.
Okay. He was with the Bears when Cutler made their run.
Yes. I believe that's probably when he made it. Probably the Lovie Smith team.
Yes. Now, his numbers, this is insane. Even moving him back to linebacker. And if they kept him on defensive end, he would have had better numbers. But linebacker, for those 3 years, 10.5 sacks, 7.5 sacks, and 11 sacks. That's on a linebacker, left outside linebacker. That's incredible.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he sort of balanced out that Green Bay attack there because they had Clay Matthews Jr. over on the other side. I think they were looking for that bookend to have there to take some of the double teams off of Clay Matthews. And looks like it worked and gave Mr. Peppers a little bit of action too. So they got the feed off of each other. And he had a good pass rusher. I mean, he was with Carolina too, and I forget who it was, but they had a
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about, Mikey. Whether it's out of my head.
Wasn't in the same caliber as Peppers was, but he was a very good player.
Now, if I remember correctly, Peppers came from North Carolina, didn't he? He was a Tar Heel.
Yes, he was.
I remember watching him play at North Carolina because we get games here every now and then from North Carolina. And as a man among boys, when Carolina drafted him, if they put a couple more players with him, their team would have been just almost unstoppable. But overall, 266 games played, longevity, like you said. And I believe it's a 5-year wait from the time you retire until you're eligible for the Hall of Fame.
That's correct.
So he has 2 more years.
Right.
2 more years. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer, or he should be.
Yeah. I mean, here's another guy that, we didn't talk about. Kearse was a pretty big man playing defensive end, but Peppers is even, gives up another like almost 25 pounds on him. Peppers was 6'7", 295 pounds. That's a giant man. That's a offensive line caliber there that he could be playing. And he's playing defensive end. So, speed rushing, power rushing, he had a lot of the moves. It's hard man to defend, to keep off your quarterback, So,
well, look at this. 9 Pro Bowlers, 3-time All Pro. All 2000 team, all 2010 team, and 2002 AP Defensive Rookie of the Year. Julius, you are top of the list, my friend.
Yeah, he had 1, 2, 3. Looks like probably about 7 or 8 years of his career, he had double digit sacks too. So that's quite an accomplishment there. I don't think there's too many people that can say that. So.
Do something right, North Carolina, to pull out somebody like Julius Peppers and Lawrence Taylor.
Right. Yeah, they have a good reputation of getting the pass rushers going there, don't they?
I'd say so.
Must be in the water down there, and Michael Jordan to boot. So some good athletes going through Chapel Hill. So, all right. Well, okay. So he's definitely on our list. He's put him into one slot.
All right.
Now I'm going to start pounding the table here because I think there's a guy, hopefully his career doesn't see a lot of injuries and it's just minor ones like he has right now. But I think TJ Watt is going to be something special. He is something special already. And, you know, I was so excited when he was still available for the Steelers to draft him. I think they drafted him like number 21 in the draft in the 2017 draft out of Wisconsin. But, you know, everybody knows about his brother. You know, JJ is a phenom. But I think, you know, TJ may be as good of a player and maybe even will attain the heights that his brother has at some point.
He probably is playing in a position where he's not going to take as much punishment as his brother, so he might have a longer career.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, they play a little bit different style of defense than Houston did in Pittsburgh. So, you know, they're usually trying to take let those three big guys in the middle, you know, take on the bigger blocks, and you know they get the speed rush and do some fun things with them. Yeah, they move them around a little bit.
I was going to ask you if they play a 3-4.
Yeah. So yeah, TJ Watt is, you know, when the Steelers got him, it was just so excited that when they did. And, you know, what he did is when he came in the league, you know, 7 sacks in his rookie year, which, you know, that's not a Javon curse by any means, but the next 3 years in a row, he went double digits and he's off to a good start already. He has 3 sacks already for this year in 2 games. So
Is it more with him? I'm not familiar with Pittsburgh. I don't get to watch him every week like you do. But is it more coverage sacks that he takes advantage of the situation, or is he a pure blitzer? Do they blitz him, or is it more cover sack? You know, he's in the right place at the right time.
They do a little bit of both. I mean, they scheme everything pretty well. They're basically a 3-4 team. So he's an outside linebacker more than he is a defensive end. But what they do, okay, like against Josh Allen of the Bills last week, they only rushed 4, sometimes only 3, to take away the passing game. But they were still got to him. He got 2 sacks on Josh Allen, who's a pretty mobile quarterback, and one was a strip sack. You know, this past week when they played the Raiders, you know, Derek Carr's not known for being, you know, a speed demon out of there, but, you know, he got a little bit of pressure before he got injured in the second quarter. He got another strip sack, but they blitzed a little bit more, I think, but they have not been blitzing that much. Last season, they let off the gas a little bit, you know, halfway through the season. They haven't done it much this year, but I think it's going to probably depend on what personnel they have out there and who they're playing. And, you know, what they, but probably somebody like, you know, Kyler Murray or, you know, Jackson of Baltimore, they're not going to want to blitz and, you know, let them get outside, you know, but some of these other guys, maybe they will. So,
yeah, I can tell you, Kyler Murray is not somebody to be messed around with.
Yeah, dangerous man.
Very much so. TJ Watt, to me, is on a career course to be one of the best linebackers of all time. He is. Is he going to be up there with Lawrence Taylor? No, but I don't think anybody will be. You know, you only have Lawrence Taylor once a generation. But with TJ Watt, if you have a team that can back you up, unlike his brother in Houston, now with Arizona, they got a team to back him up. But if you have a team that can back up somebody like TJ Watt, his career is going to look so much better.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it was a real mistake last year. I think – and I'm trying to put my bias away, but I think TJ Watt deserved to be the defensive player of the year and not Aaron Donald. And Aaron Donald came out of Pitt, you know, so he's a Pittsburgh guy. You know, people in Pittsburgh love him too. But TJ Watt had more sacks, had more tackles for loss. He played in more games and he had more overall tackles than Aaron Donald. But, and I couldn't believe when they voted and had Aaron Donald over TJ Watt last year. A lot of people were up in arms about that, and I can't disagree with them. But maybe he'll get his one of these years, sir.
Maybe he will. Maybe he will. Should TJ Watt be on our list?
I feel that he should because of his trajectory is so good. He's only got, you know, 4 seasons in, and he's starting his 5th. But he's the highest paid defensive player in football right now ever, as of a couple weeks ago.
But I got him down.
Okay. So I will put him down as our number 2 here. And
JPP.
Okay.
Jason Pierre-Paul is one of the guys I enjoy watching. I enjoy him because of several reasons, but one of them is he was on one of the episodes of Tackle My Ride, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, what kind of car did he take on?
It was a van.
Really?
It was a van. Now, if you were to ask me what NFC team I like, the Giants will be up there close to the top. I just like the Giants mystique. I love their colors. Well, they basically took this van and put the Giant colors around it and stenciled in numbers and names of great players. And you'll need to, if you get a chance to watch it, Tackle My Ride, New York Giants. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But I tell you what, Jason Pierre-Paul is underrated, but he is another guy that if I could put him on one end and Javon Curtis in his prime on the other and put Julius Peppers wherever he wants to stand, TJ Watt, you're not going anywhere against us. Yeah. And I'm glad JPP won a Super Bowl last year.
You know, can you remember back? Like, I think it was at the end of 2017, before the 2018 season, when he left the Giants and went to Tampa Bay. I can't remember if they traded him or if he went as a free agent, but I think it was a trade because people were up in arms and saying, oh my gosh, you know, poor JPP, you know, he had that horrendous injury with the fireworks or whatever happened there. You know, Giants let him go. Now he's going to this, you know, horrible team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, woe is me, what's going to happen? What, a few years later, he's winning a Super Bowl and they're on another run this year to looking pretty good.
Now, let's see. When did the Giants win their Super Bowls against the Patriots? Because I think he won one with the Giants, didn't he? Or won two?
I think he might have just won the one. I don't think he was there. One. Yeah, I think it was 2011, I think.
Okay. So he's okay. He is all right. For JPP fans, he's okay right where he is. He is not the emphasis on the defense. And I don't know if you can hear it, but it suddenly started raining down here in Tennessee. He's not the emphasis of the defense, but he really does a good job of emphasizing the other players and getting pressure off of them so they can do their job. And if I'm looking at this correctly, they have him no longer playing defensive end, but linebacker, which tells you again just how gifted and athletic he is that he can move from one position to another like that.
Yeah, I think they switched to a 3-4. In his second year, he was here when he was defensive end, and they went to a 3-4, so they consider him an outside linebacker now. But you know, to be, you know, he's a little long in the tooth. He's in his 12th year, 11th year, and playing outside linebacker and making that switch where you've got a little bit more running and bending, and he's doing a great job. You know, 89 sacks in his career so far, and you know, just a tremendous player. And comes from comes from the College of the Canyons in California and South Florida. I played for both of those teams.
Yeah, I remember him playing for South Florida. That was the Bulls, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it is.
South Florida. Oh, good gracious. I knew their coach. Was it Scott Frost? Did he coach there at one point?
That I couldn't tell you. I'm not that familiar with them. We don't get a lot of their games up here.
We do not get a lot of their games down here either, but I tell you what, South Florida is a neat place to. Hey, I went to college in South Florida.
I love their helmet logo. Their helmet logo is really cool.
It is very cool. It is very cool. Horn.
Yeah,
and I'm sure people are listening to this yelling that I'm wrong about the coach of South Florida. If I'm wrong, it's Darren's fault. Just let him. he got me on here. No, JPP though. When you watch him play. He's one of those guys that not only is quick, but he's fluid. There's not a lot of wasted movement. I was watching the Super Bowl last year. Just watching him, even when he's getting a little bit older, it doesn't look like he efforts as much. It's not forced. He's just that good. You know, when watching him when he was younger, it looked like he tried a little too hard, but he started getting used to playing. And it's almost like his actions, there's not a wasted movement. It's so fluid. He's just a good player overall.
Yeah, I mean, what a job he did in the Super Bowl, too. When you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, who lives on, you know, getting outside the pocket and just, you know, having some goofy arm motion to throw a pass, you know, some freakish distance that that shouldn't be humanly possible. But they kept him in that pocket and threw pressure up the middle on him, and he had nowhere to go because, you know, JPP and his colleague on the other side just stayed home and, you know, kept that edge. And Mahomes had nowhere to run to get the outside and, you know, get his passes that he lives on. And I think that was a big difference in that game.
As Darren and I, we've been talking for a while about doing something about Super Bowl rings, and I don't know if we can do it because of licensing and trademarks, but we both looked at the rings that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came out with this year, and they look pretty sharp. They are so much better than their first ring by far.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
I'll tell you what, though. JPP is his hands are weighed down with those two gigantic rings on his fingers.
Well, he's a big man, so I think he can probably handle it. He'd probably like to have a few more to tone his weight himself out, balance him out here on his
side. I read somewhere yesterday, way off the subject, but I read somewhere yesterday that Tom Brady wants to play till he's 50.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, Tom, you got more money than most third world countries. Your wife has more money than you. You've got 7 Super Bowl rings, and I think 2 of them were legit Super Bowl rings, maybe. I don't know. Do you really want to worry about playing to your 50? George Blanda did, or real close to it. I don't know if Tom Brady can do it.
You know, I have a different respect for Tom Brady the last maybe 3 years. I mean, before he was just, you know, because he was like the nemesis of my team. And it was, you know, you had to get by Brady to get anywhere to the Super Bowl if you were an AFC team. And now I think the man loves to play the game of football so much. It's definitely not the money. You know, he could retire, you know, 5 years ago and been on TV or commercials or whatever, or both, and been making a fortune. And plus all the money he has saved. But I think he loves the competitive nature of football, almost like Brett Favre did. You know, Favre would play games to come back and have to think about it. Brady's, you know, telling you right up front, hey, I'm coming back next year. I'm coming back. You know, there's not much doubt. Most people, like you say, they figure he's going to be back next year even. And you can't say that for, you know, all quarterbacks that they'll be doing that. So
the last thing you want to be is the backup for Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you got to handle it. I mean, the guy's only had one major injury in his career. You know, it was a horrific one. He suffered early in the season.
Yeah. That gave Matt Castle a lot of money from Kansas City. That earned him a lot of money.
That most certainly did. Most certainly did. All right. Well, what do we want to do with JPP?
I put him over in the corner with Javon.
You think so? Okay. We can do that.
But I think both of them are going to end up on our list.
I think you're probably right.
Here's one guy that I really enjoy. And I remember the draft that this took place, 2006. I was waiting to see where Jay Cutler was going to go. Actually, I was waiting to see where the Titans were going to go with the number 3 pick. And I thought, we're going to get Matt Leinart. I didn't think they were going to get Cutler. I thought they were going to get Leinart. And we got Vince Young. Well, the first pick for the Houston Texans, and Howard Cassidy, trying to remember the name of the GM for the Texans at the time.
Charlie Cassidy?
That's his name, yes. He took so much heat because he picked Mario Williams.
Oh, that's right.
Mario Williams. And I believe they signed him before the draft, which I think Roger Goodell put a kibosh to that. But so many people were saying they're going to go Reggie Bush. They're going to go Reggie Bush. And Reggie Bush didn't have a bad career. But if you're looking at somebody who made a difference immediately, it was Mario Williams.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, when he came in the league, In Houston, I think he started all 16 games for him. I was thinking he got injured. Now, he had a little bit of a disappointment because he only had 4.5 sacks, but I think he was probably drawn to double teams because people saw what he did in college, and he was a wrecking crew in college, and I can see why he went number one. And he was a North Carolina State product, so just up the road from where Peppers was. It Peppers that was North Carolina? Yeah.
See, what happened with them, with Mario Williams, is, everybody is the GM in their couch. Everybody says that, everybody I was reading, everybody said, it's got to be, you need Vince Young. And there was even a push for Vince Young because Houston, he was from Texas. He would be in Houston. It would draw so many of those fans in from Houston. Of course, he went to the University of Texas, won a championship. I remember going to bed for that game, by the way. I went to bed. I thought the game was over. So many people said, well, they're going to pick Vince Young number one. They didn't, and I think they made the right choice by getting Mario Williams. And if I remember correctly as well, when he went up to Buffalo, he didn't have trying to remember exactly what was – okay, I was thinking of one year, the last year in Houston. He had a career in Buffalo that was so underrated that Buffalo really did get their money's worth out of him.
Yeah, I think he actually played better as a Buffalo Bill than he did as a Houston Texan.
Oh, I think so too.
The numbers sort of support that too. I mean, a little bit shorter career there, but he had double-digit sacks every single year except for the last year he was there.
I don't remember his time with Miami. I don't. But when I remember Houston, because we play him two times a year, and we had to make sure we knew where he was every time.
Yeah, no, so I think you were sort of alluding to it, but you mentioned four names. I mean, that was a pretty good draft class that year. Mario Williams was the number one pick, but you said Vince Williams, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. Who was the other big back out of USC? Their big bruiser.
Lindell White. Lindell White went to Tennessee. We had at that time we had Chris Johnson and Lindell White, and they called him Thunder and Lightning.
Right. So you had some pretty good draft picks, coming out of the call as college players. They were all outstanding. And like you said, Houston really took a lot of heat for taking Mario Williams number one. But probably if you look back now in hindsight, he was probably the best player of those five. Had the best NFL career anywhere.
That line from draft day where Kevin Costner's talking to the owner of the Browns, and they take him to this water slide, and they said people pay to get splashed. They pay to get splashed. What people wanted with this draft is they wanted a splashy name. They wanted Reggie Bush. They wanted Matt Leinart. They wanted Vince Young. Mario Williams was not a splashy name. He turned out that out of those people, even Cutler had a longer career. Well, not really. But every one of those players, Mario Williams is the one that had probably the better career.
Yeah, I think arguably you could say that, because even like you said, Cutler and Bush had really good NFL careers, and we're young, and Lindell White maybe not so much. Bush had a decent career, but Mario wasn't a superstar. I mean, they called him Super Mario, but he had a very effective career, especially how many times did he have double digit sacks in his career? Five
times. What's funny? In front of me right here, I have the Topps, official Topps 2006 football cards, every one of them from that group. And I'm looking at some rookies that came out from that year. And Mario Williams he was the best player of that draft, which either you take that as a good thing or you take that as a bad thing. I don't know. He just was a good player. And I think he was completely underrated.
I totally agree with you. And I think, like I said, I think Buffalo probably found the most value for him. But,
Bobby Comforter was a rookie that year. I did not know that.
you know, he's comparative to, and I think, you know, before we go away from him, I think we'll put him definitely on our standby list here as well. But I think his career, he sort of reminds me of another player that's on this list is still currently playing. That's Jadeveon Clowney. You know, they both came out, were, you know, very splash players in college, very, you know, highly touted, you know, high draft picks. And, you know, then Clowney went to the Texans also, didn't he? Is he originally a Texan?
Yes, he did. And yeah. I was thinking of Jadeveon. Hold on a second, Darren. Keep talking. There's somebody coming up to the door.
Okay. Yeah. You know, Clowney, I think, is so similar, his story. And some, you know, so there's times where I, you know, I almost overlap their careers because they're so similar. But yeah, Houston taking another great pass rusher. Of course, at that time they had, you know, J.J. Watt on the other side. He played a little bit with Mario too. But that's why they could afford to let Mario go to Buffalo, because in 2014, Houston got Clowney, and Clowney got injured early on in the season. He only played two games at his rookie season in 2014. But then he sort of didn't live up to his expectations so far in his career. You know, so far in his career, he has 32 sacks in approximately, seven full seasons. Now he is with Cleveland. So we'll see what he can do there.
Well, Jadeveon came in. I remember him coming into the Titans and thinking, whoa, we just got a good one on the end there. And didn't quite work out the way I thought it would.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work out.
He sort of got that stigma after leaving Houston of sort of being that, you know, almost like that merchant marine or that hired hand that you bring in if you need it. And that's what he did at Seattle. Had a great season with Seattle a couple years ago in 2019, but didn't quite do that with Tennessee. But, you know, who knows with Cleveland? They've got a lot of talent there, and they've got a guy on the other side, Myles Garrett, that people really have to worry about. And Garrett's probably going to get the double team over Clowney a lot of times, I'll bet, this year.
You think that Clowney, of course, he was the first pick, I believe. He was first pick out of South Carolina. Do you think he got the attention because of that hit against Michigan in, was it the Outback Bowl?
Well, I think he was pretty highly touted in the middle of the season. You know, they were covering South Carolina like nobody's business that year. And I forget, I think it was Spurrier, the coach at Carolina that year. Okay. And so he was pretty highly touted the whole season long. And I can remember they were, you know, putting him on Heisman watch and everything else all year long. So he got quite a bit of attention in the college game. And he lived up to it. He had a great college career.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, though, somebody like Jadeveon is good to have on your team. He's a good player overall. But as you see with his numbers, he has a hard time to stay healthy.
That's very true. Very true. At South Carolina, I just pulled his stats up. He ended up having in his three seasons playing there, 47 tackles for loss, 24 sacks. And that's not too shabby. That's only three his final year. People were starting to figure out who he was, and he was getting a little bit of attention with some extra blockers coming at him.
I remember that, and I think I remember people saying, quit playing, Jadeveon, you're going to cost yourself money. I think that's what they were saying, that just sit out the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's probably true, probably true. And probably wasn't that bad of advice, too, because he would have probably cost himself some money on that.
So he lined up with Myles Garrett. You see, you're going to see him come through. Myles Garrett is a monster. That's awesome. He's an awesome player. But yeah, I like Jadeveon. But I think if you were to take those two and say, do you want Mario Williams in your prime or Jadeveon? I would take Mario.
Oh, most definitely. But I'm just trying to make the point. They sort of had a similar path, their NFL career, or coming into the NFL was sort of similar.
And absolutely.
So, but it's probably the Texans connection, being the number one pick of the Texans. So. Yeah.
Do you pick for flash or do you pick for need? And if you're going to pick for flash, the most flashy defensive position to me is defensive end. You know, you can pick a cornerback, but a defensive end is the guy that's going to get you the sacks.
Yeah, you want the pass rushers. That's the hot ticket on the defensive side, just like a quarterback is on the offensive side. Those are the key positions that people are really going after in the draft. So that's why you see so many of them in the top 10. You know,
play 4-3, please, so we can have two defensive ends. That just have just 4-3.
Right.
That's just,
I know they want to get paid as defensive ends because I think a defensive end's contracts are higher in the bargaining agreement than an outside linebacker. So
they are. And I've seen people say, well, I'm a tight end, but I catch more passes than wide receivers, but you line up as a tight end. Just
of course, perhaps that's not true anymore because Myles Garrett signed a big contract last year, TJ Watt this year. Maybe that's not the case anymore. Maybe now defensive ends want to be outside linebackers. Who knows?
Yep. I got a good one. I got a good one. The one that I enjoyed watching, Vonnie Holiday.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that name.
Vonnie Holiday. He played in the 90s. Let's see. Just looking at his time with Green Bay. He did not win a Super Bowl with Green Bay. Overall, had a pretty decent career. Let's see, sacks. He had 62.5 sacks, which is pretty solid for a guy who lined up as defensive tackle many years. But he played for some bad teams. So having 62 sacks as a defensive tackle is pretty solid.
Yeah, it definitely is. He was definitely a very good player. And I can remember him. He played on quite a few teams here. He was quite the journeyman here. Green Bay, Kansas City, Miami, Denver, Washington, Arizona. He was all over the country.
Everybody goes to retire in Arizona. I guess that's where he went.
Yeah, I guess not a bad place to retire to, huh?
No, it's not a bad place at all. Not a bad place at all. But one thing I remember about Vonnie Holiday is he had an incredible motor. He had a credible motor. And if you look at his first few years with Green Bay, you could tell with his sack totals that his motor was pretty solid, but he just couldn't stay healthy. He just couldn't stay healthy. Yeah. Out of all the games that he could play, he said he played 214 games in a 14, 13-year career. That's, you know, he just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, that wears down on your body. And he's a pretty big guy too, 6'5", 288 pounds in his playing days. And, you know, you're going up against 300-pound plus players, you know, some good athletes on the offensive tackles that are just beating on you as you're coming in there. And those guys' punches, when they call them punches, they're not kidding. They're sticking it to you, trying to keep you off their quarterback. So that takes a toll on you after a few years.
Oh, I think it does. I can't imagine somebody like, you know, people are saying about J.J. Watt and his durability, but look who he has to go up against. Look what he has to go up against. He's going to take double team from the biggest guys each time. The same thing with Mario Williams. When you see a blitz, they're going to clip him with a running back, or they're going to put a tight end on him and try to usher him away from the quarterback. You're going to take a beating like this. So yeah. If you're looking at not playing all 16 games, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. But, yeah, Vonnie Holiday, though, but very good player. I'm surprised, though, he didn't have any Pro Bowl seasons, and he had some nice seasons there. And, no All-Pros either, but definitely a significant player that I'm glad you mentioned. I have one that sort of jumps out as how about Jay Ratliff? Just recently played 2015 was his last season. The last three seasons he played was with the Chicago Bears, but his first eight seasons was as a Dallas Cowboy as their nose tackle.
I remember him as a Cowboy. Nose tackle. See, this is again the 3-4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the trend, early 2000s in the 90s. The four Pro Bowls, an All-Pro, 35 sacks, but nose tackles, you know, they have him listed as a defensive end, but he played nose tackle the majority of his time in Dallas. But, you know, they're the hole pluggers. They're, you know, take up space, eat up the A gaps, and let everybody else filter in behind you. So But he was very effective as a, his position and a significant player as well.
I remember watching him several times on Thanksgiving. You would hear his name called out. That's something that you have to be a team player to play nose tackle. That's why Albert Haynesworth didn't do what he did in Washington. He wanted the numbers. But you got to be a team player to eat up the blocks like that, and Jay Ratliff certainly was.
Yeah, most definitely. That's those guys are very giving up their bodies to let the linebackers look good most of the time. So that's a good thing there. Ndamukong Suh, he wore the jersey number 90 for 5 seasons. And what can you say about Ndamukong Suh? You know, some people look at him as a dirty player, and there's been occasions he has been. He's probably done some naughty things on the football field. He's paid his dues for it. But man, this guy is a beast, and he still is a beast, a force to be reckoned with.
Got the Super Bowl ring as well. When he came out of Oklahoma, if I remember correctly.
Nebraska.
Nebraska, excuse me. Yeah, it was Nebraska. It was Gerald McCoy came out of Oklahoma. That's what I was thinking of. They both came out about the same time.
Right.
I remember making a character for him on Madden that year. And just putting, you know, what people said that he was going to be, just putting him in like that and then watching him play. Madden got it right. He was just that good of a player.
Yeah, very strong player. You know, they have him listed 6'4", 313-pound defensive tackle. But his first 5 years were with the Lions. And he had 10 sacks in his first year as a rookie. Ended up, I think he made the Pro Bowl that season too. Yeah, he did. He was an All Pro as a rookie. But 5 Pro Bowls altogether so far in his career. 3 All Pros, Super Bowl championship. That was 2 years ago. Was that with Kansas City? You got that?
No, he went to Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay. That's right.
And if you look in 2018, he played in the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Yes, that's true. You know, all decades team of the 2010s and the rookie of the year in 2010. You know, just a tremendous player. 65 and a half sacks so far in his career. That's pretty good for an interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, again, when you're talking about this is where I have to tell people, my dad was asking me this, well, why does the defensive tackles, why do they have so low of a sack and tackle numbers? You can't judge them like you would an outside player, because they're not going to get a lot of up the middle stuff. And you're also going to be clipped. You're going to be blocked by the center and the guards. So you're going to have double team in a lot of cases. Your goal is to open it up for the people outside. And if you can get a sack or a tackle as a defensive tackle or sack, you know, any of those things, you're doing pretty good. So 65 sacks is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the other reason probably is, you know, you're right up against the blockers. You're, you know, a football's length away from your nearest guy. So they can get on you fast and get hands on you. You don't have that clean rush where the linebackers, both the middle linebackers on stunts and the outside linebackers, sometimes they get a clean shot. Somebody misses a block, or, you know, a back's supposed to pick them up and they can blow through the back, or, just do a speed rush on an offensive tackle that's not have his feet right. They get a nice shot at the quarterback, where those interior linemen, they have to go through somebody most of the time.
If you look at it also, and Arnie, I'm sorry about to say this, he had 3 All Pros and 4 Pro Bowls with a very bad Detroit line team.
Yeah, that's very true. He had him on the defensive side and Stafford and Calvin Johnson on the other.
Doesn't look like Matt Stafford is missing Detroit at all right now.
No, he's looking pretty good.
He's looking pretty good.
Yeah, he definitely is. But yeah, I think Sue's probably one that we want to put under consideration here.
Yeah. Now, the big thing is I'm going to call him Sue, because I don't know if I can spell Ndamukong.
Ndamukong Suh. Okay. Well, you call him Sue.
I call him Mr. Sue.
The old Johnny Cash, though.
Yes.
The boy named Sue. So, and he's no boy, though. Okay. We got so many great players here. How about Darnell Dockett, who wore jersey for 10 seasons? Tremendous linebacker there.
Played for Arizona?
Yes. He was defensive tackle, played with them for his entire career. And he was there during that Super Bowl in 2010 when the Steelers beat the Cardinals. But I remember he was a person to contend with in that game.
Yes, that was that game. I remember where I was when that game took place. That was a good game. I know you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's got my two of my favorite Super Bowl plays ever happening in that same game. So
I just don't know how James Harrison did what he did. But look at this on the defensive stats that he has. 113 quarterback hits. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is, again, they have him lined up as a defensive tackle. Again, if you can, in 1 year, in 2007, 19 hits. Wow.
Yeah, it looks like he moved outside. He moved to right defensive end the last 5 years of his career. So it sort of split his career between defensive tackle and defensive end. Probably they've
changed. Have somebody as good as he is, you need to put him on the outside so he doesn't get beat up as much.
Yeah. But 290-pound, defensive end. So another big fella having to try to get around those corners. But he did well. He didn't have any seasons where he had double digit sacks. But I don't think the sacks are what made him so strong. It was that you had to most of the time double team him, and he was a run stuffer. That's when the backs would, get the tackle for loss, or maybe only get hit right at the line of scrimmage and go down. But he was definitely a truck in there. That's for sure.
I remember watching him play, and I believe in that Super Bowl, he was, let's see if I have his number for the Super Bowl. I believe in the Super Bowl, he had a pretty good game as well.
Yeah, I think he did. I'm not seeing any of his postseason is not listed on here.
Okay. Well, 2008, you said?
2008.
All right. In the playoffs, 4 games, 11 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 3 quarterback hits. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty special. That's for sure.
He lined up as a defensive tackle, too. So there you go.
Yeah, most definitely. So I think he's one that we ought to be taking a look at here at the end. How about Neil Smith? I mean, there's a name from the past that was a great defender.
All right. See, Neil Smith, with me, I have a love dislike because my grandfather would come back and get me if I say hate. I have a love dislike relationship with him. And here's the dislike. He played for the Chiefs when I was a Broncos fan. The love, he played for the Broncos when they won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Two of them.
Right.
Neil Smith is on he made our list. He is definitely on that list. In 12 seasons, 13 seasons, let's see, 13 seasons, 104 sacks.
Yeah.
And his last year, he didn't get any. So that's 12 seasons. That's pretty good.
Real good. Anytime you have three numbers there for your sack total, that's a very significant player.
And he came over from Kansas City to Denver. I remember that day when he came over and they signed him. I knew at that point that Denver not only had the offense with Terrell Davis, John Elway, Ed McCaffrey, Shannon Sharp, but they added Neil Smith to a defense that needed a Neil Smith. And for 2 years, look what he did.
Yeah,
actually with 3 years, he did an amazing thing. He did amazing. But the 2 years for the Super Bowl run.
Yeah, most definitely. 6 Pro Bowls in his career, an all pro once, 2 Super Bowl championships, like you said, and the all 1990s decade team. Just a fantastic player. 582.
He should be in the Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah, when I was saying, 2 to 3, I was, of course, saying, Peppers definitely. I think Watt's got a shot if he continues his trajectory. And Neil Smith is another one I think has a real good shot of getting in the Hall of Fame.
I forgot that he played for San Diego. I forgot that.
Yeah, it looks like maybe he wanted to probably forget that too. But
like you say, he had a cup of coffee there.
Right, right. But yeah, okay. So I have him third on our list then. So that takes up three of our spots. Yeah,
you got Peppers, Watt,
and Smith.
And Smith. All right.
Right. And then we got a bunch that we're going to come back and look at. But another one maybe we got to think about here is Rob Burnett. Another really strong contender here. You know, defensive end, came in the league with the Cleveland Browns 1990, played with them through the 95 season, then went to, you know, moved to Baltimore, was there through 2001, and then was a Miami Dolphin 2002, 2003.
You had me until you said Baltimore.
Well, it was the same franchise, basically.
It was the same franchise. 73 sacks. That's pretty good.
Yeah, he was a force to be reckoned with. And, great career he had. It was just consistent. He had two seasons where he went over, had 10 sacks or more. But everything else was sort of, you know, in that 9-7, you know, for some years of 3-4. But he was consistent. And very good ball player.
Yeah, he won that. I remember that year. I don't remember him per se, but I remember that defense. Ooh, that defense. I'm surprised that you would have 10 sacks with him from a defense that came with Ray Lewis and all those guys. How he had that many times getting a sack. That means he's pretty good.
Yeah, they were. That's probably one of the best defenses in NFL history right there. I hate to say it because they're a division rival, but they were good. Real good.
All right. So, and also, if I remember correctly, Darren, you might know this more than I do because they were in your division. The 94 Cleveland Browns, that had Bill Belichick as the head coach. Am I right on that?
I think you're right. It's right in that time frame, yes.
It had the defensive coordinator, and I cannot believe I forgot his name, coach for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and my Tide friends are going to get me for that. He was the defensive coordinator. That team.
You're saying Nick Saban?
Yeah, Nick Saban was the defensive coordinator.
Yes. Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yes. Thank you. I cannot believe I forgot saying Nick's name. But that team, compared to your 85 and 86 Browns, that team was one of the best Browns team that they pulled out. And if they had gone further, I believe Cleveland would have given them the stadium that they wanted, and you would never have the Baltimore Ravens the way they are right now. Now, I believe Baltimore would have gotten a team, but it wouldn't be the Browns. I believe they've gotten an expansion team.
Yeah, 94, the Browns were 11-5 and took second in the AFC Central Division. I wonder who won that division that
year. I see where that's going. I see where you're going with that.
Well, they had a good team, but that's the really good Bill Cowher teams that they have back there. Greg Lloyd and company. Kevin Green was on that Steelers defense. Woodson was still there. They were pretty strong too, so.
I'm thinking that when you look at that Cleveland team that year, they had it, and I think they pretty much imploded. And then, of course, the next year after that, I believe that year was pretty much ruined because they knew that they were going to leave.
Yeah, I think, well, they sort of had the writing on the wall. I think it was Belichick that sort of chased Kozar out of town for Testaverde, and that was probably a mistake. Testaverde, good quarterback, but he liked to throw a lot to the other team sometimes. So that sort of got him in trouble. And he was one of the best quarterbacks the Steelers ever had. Never played for him though. But that he threw quite a few. But yeah, we famously called him Interceptiverity up here, and the Browns fans didn't care for that too much.
I see what you did with that.
But Burnett though had the one Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl championship, as we said, with the Baltimore Ravens. So he definitely another significant player.
Let's put him on the maybe list.
Okay. All right. The other one I have still here flying out here is Larry Brooks. Another great name from the past. And he wore the number 90 as a defensive tackle for the 72 Rams is when he came in the league all the way through 1982. And this man had five Pro Bowls and an All-Pro. 74 and a half sacks from the defensive tackle position. We said how significant that is from an interior lineman.
Now, this is why I love listening to your podcast. Not only do you give us the positive football news daily, but you also bring up names like Larry Brooks, which I've probably seen him play but didn't know who he was. And this is why I appreciate the Peace Kid Dispatch so much.
Oh, well, thank you. That's what we want to do. We want to preserve that football history, you know, just like all our other shows on Sports History Network. But
so if you were to take out 81, 82, 75, and 72, where he didn't even play 10 games those years, the rest of his career looks so amazing. I mean, again, when you're talking, and I believe in 79, they went to the Super Bowl, if I remember correctly. Am I right on that?
Yeah, they did. And I forget who they lost.
Oh, see, I keep walking into that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you're folks. A secret Steelers fan. I know it. I think your father-in-law, he did his job. So
he did his job. And of course, I'm looking across. I have a Steelers helmet hidden in the corner of this office here. But he played alongside Jack Youngblood.
Yeah. And, I think they had a great defense those years that he was there, and he was a big part of that.
Vince Ferragamo.
Yeah, right. Ferragamo.
Say those names. You have to say them with flair, or you can't say them at all. You can't say Jack Young.
Who is the lady, blonde-haired lady that owned them? She took over from
Georgia.
Rosenblum, right?
Georgia Fontier.
Fontier. Right. Fontier, okay. Yeah,
she was flamboyant too. Love the hair. I was watching something today. I was looking at something on Facebook today that said Aquanet is the original Gorilla Glue. If you want to know why we have problems with the ozone, it is Aquanet.
Oh, it's the hairspray. Most definitely. And some of the aerosol deodorants probably too. They were big popular back in the 70s.
It's like when you know that you did it right is when you could put your arm down because your arms frozen in place.
And your arm hairs would stick to the inside of your shirt when you go take your shirt
exactly.
off.
Exactly. Said air in the 80s stood no chance with Aquanet and White Rain. But no, right. I like looking at Larry Brooks, defensive tackle, 74 sacks. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. He's another very significant one. I think we got to take a look here when we go to our deliberations here. That's pretty much I have. I mean, there's some other names. Do you have other names that you want to talk about?
I like one more.
Okay,
one more, if I could, please.
Yeah, please.
One of my favorite all-time players, and it's not because he was that good, but because of he was good, but because of the commercial he was with State Farm commercial with Aaron Rodgers. That's B.J. Raji.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, his nickname was the Freezer. You know, you had William Perry in the fridge. He's the Freezer. Listen to this. This guy, 6'2", 334 pounds. Yeah, that, to me, is a man mountain right there.
He was built like a bowling ball, too, because he's another one that he was a Steeler killer in that 2010 Super Bowl. He plugged up that middle pretty well.
And he could dance. He had some rhythm to him. And I love watching defensive tackles dance. You know, they get to it. I love watching. They had him listed as nose tackle, so his numbers are not going to jump out and get you. And when you had Clay Matthews and A.J. Hawk, I believe, was on that team as well, their numbers are going to be more pronounced. But they weren't really, other than Clay Matthews, they weren't really a sacking team. But you didn't get very far with them. You just didn't go against the Packers. They had a good defense all together. But for the career he played, he was, other than 1 year where he missed, he played a lot of games in nose tackle. He's not going to be on the list, but I really like B.J. Raji.
Yeah, great player. But you know what killed me? That 2010 Super Bowl, that 2010 year Steelers were playing Green Bay. Their defense played phenomenal in the Super Bowl. But I looked over at the sideline. You had Dom Capers, the former defensive coordinator of the Steelers, as their defensive coordinator. Kevin Green, you know, one of the great Steelers outside linebackers, is a linebackers coach there. And I'm sort of going, oh gosh, this is like a bittersweet pill we're taking here. We have all these great Steeler legends over there on the other side, helping the other team win here. So
I want to bet with my wife in that Super Bowl.
Did you really?
Yeah, she picked the Steelers. I picked the Packers. What did I get? I got like pizza or something out of it. I should have done more, but I was afraid. She usually wins the bets. Yeah,
you're allowed to bet that. See, we have to bet like foot rubs or back rubs or something. You know,
well, that was what was her thing, and I'm not a foot person. I am not a foot person at all, and that's why I was afraid to bet anymore. Or I'd have to rub feet.
I'd much rather pay the money and buy a pizza than doing the.
Oh, it's good pizza.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, we had to go to Camden to get the pizza, but it was good pizza.
Yeah, I just have a couple more names, and we don't have to go into great detail. Well, maybe one. Michael Brockers. I think he's.
I remember him too.
Now, he didn't have any Pro Bowls or All Pros. He probably won't make this list. Had 29 sacks in his career. Defensive tackle that played for the St. Louis Rams, I believe at the time they were in 2012, and then went to LA with the Rams all the way till last year, and this year he's with the Detroit Lions. But very significant player and a good ball player in the NFL currently.
Yeah, went to a Super Bowl. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I think he's worth mentioning. A couple others, Chris Kelsey, another good player, Tony Brackens, Marco Coleman, great linebacker, and Justin Smith is another one I think is worth mentioning. All very good players in their own right.
I remember watching Chris Kelsey play for the Bills. He was a pretty solid player too.
Yeah, most definitely he was. Okay, do you have any more you want to mention before we try to wrap up our list here?
No, I think we've got a pretty good list so far, Darren. We got Julius Peppers, right. We got T.J. Watt, and we got right. Neil Smith.
Right.
I think we could put JPP on that list as well.
I think you're probably right there, so we'll put him in the fourth spot. Okay. You want me to go through the names we said we were going to come back to here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so we have Rob Burnett, Mario Williams, Larry Brooks, Darnell Dockett, Vonnie Holiday, Jadeveon Clowney, and Ndamukong Suh, and Jay Ratliff, and Javon Kearse. So we need to get six more from those names.
Well, I would say Mario Williams would be on that list.
Just going to say that. I totally agree with that one. I think Larry Brooks deserves to be on there with the five Pro Bowls
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. I think Jay Ratliff should probably be on there.
All right.
So that's seven.
I got to put my boy Javon Kearse on there.
Okay. That's eight. Probably Mr. Sue ought to be on there because he is.
I would say so too.
He is definitely a force to be reckoned with. And so we have to pick one more out of our names we have left.
Oh, gosh. So
probably this with Burnett, Dockett, Clowney, Holiday. And
I would say that it's probably down to Darnell, Dockett, and Rob Burnett.
I agree. I agree there. And I'm probably leaning towards Burnett on that too.
I'm with you.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, there's our 10. That's a pretty good list of number 90s. And like I said, I think there'll be at least three from this list we'll see in our lifetime in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, maybe four.
I think Julius Peppers and Neil Smith should be in there pretty soon.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But they might see some of these other guys trickle in here too. So some good ball players there. Well, what do you, I thank you for helping get that list here. What do you have coming up on the Football's Family podcast and in your future we can listen to?
Well, we have, I have two guests coming up. One tomorrow that will be released tomorrow night. And then I got one coming up in October about fantasy football. But we're also looking at having more guests. And the thing is, I'm opening it up. Anybody can come on. This is the best part about Football's Family. You don't have to have a book. You don't have to have a podcast. If you want to talk about 10 minutes about why you're a football fan, that's what we're here for. You know, Darren and Dana and all the rest of the everybody else takes care of the football history. I want to deal with what makes you a football fan. Now, we do a little history, but I have a lot of great podcast co-hosts on the website and on the podcast and network that do a great job of football history. I want to know why people like what they do. So if you want to be on this and tell me why you like football or tell me why I'm wrong about my football fandom, I'm okay with that too. You can hit me up on Twitter at Jeremy_McFarland or follow us on the Football's Family Facebook page. And just let me know when you want to come on and I'll get you on.
Yeah, I think that's real important what you say, because you know I've listened to every episode you've had out. I'd listen every week, but the one that really always sticks in my head is your first episode when you had that couple from, that's a Tennessee Titans fan
there.
And they were just so entertaining and just talking, you know, just like they would, you know, talking on somebody's front porch, talking about the Titans. And it was just so comfortable of a conversation and so entertaining to listen to. And that's what I think, you know, Football's Family, that's what you're describing. That's what I want.
That's what I'm on. And you'll notice with my podcast that it's very informal. And that's the big thing. It's going to be that way because, you know, it's football. Just talk football and people will enjoy it. You don't have to have formality. It doesn't have to be anything great. Just talk football. And, you know, here's the thing. I'm even opening it up to college, high school. And if somebody wants to talk baseball, I will let them talk and I will nod my head like I know what they're saying.
And he's saying this with a baseball hat on backwards, like a catcher. Okay. You're hiding that.
It's my Titans. Not after Sunday, y'all. That was that game. I have the last 3 years of draft hats, and this is the Tennessee Titans draft hat when they came to Tennessee. It has the 3 stars for Tennessee on it. You know. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just a little education right there, Darren. That's free. Okay. That's free.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, you know, keep doing what you're doing there because we're loving it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the podcast. And, you know, folks, make sure you take a listen. As soon as you get done here, go over there and check out some of Jeremy's podcasts. You can find them at any of your favorite podcast providers or on sportshistorynetwork.com. And Football is Family is the name of the show. And, Jeremy, I thank you very much for taking the time to share the history of these great players with us and share your knowledge. And we wish you well, my friend. I thank you.
Darren, I want to hear you say, can you say tighten up?
No, I think I'm starting to tighten up by having to say that. You know, I'm black. Okay. I got black and gold in my blood. I don't stray. I honor players from other teams, but I can't say the call words of another team. That's like you, cheating, Dad. You know. Thank you.
I understand. Thank you.
Hey, are you ready for some football? Some fantasy football? How about some daily fantasy football? Silly questions, right? Of course you are. You're ready to talk some smack and win some cash every Sunday and Thursday and Monday and whenever there's football games. The Sports History Network invites you to play your daily fantasy football this season at ThriveFantasy.com. Thrive Fantasy offers hundreds of thousands, millions in cash every day on NBA, MLB, PGA, golf, cricket, esports, and of course, NFL football. Every week during the 2021 NFL season, Thrive Fantasy has pool play contests and heads-up matches with prizes of all sizes, and even free play contests for real money. Sign up with Thrive Fantasy today to get a 100% match bonus on your first deposit for up to $100 in free daily fantasy football play. Visit sportshistorynetwork.com/thrive. That's THRIVE. Or enter promo code SHN when depositing at the cashier. Join Thrive Fantasy today, earn cash prizes, and support great shows like this at the Sports History Network. Now that's a win-win-win situation for you to kick off your own NFL season.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.